Chapter 14. The Imperial Way. True to the throne, and hard to kill. The battle pledge of the Volpone Bluebloods. Enough! Gaunt snarled. The gunfire, which had been shaking the martial court, died away fitfully. The air reeked of laser discharge, cartridge powder, and blood. VPHC corpses littered the floor and the shattered wooden seating ranks. One or two Bluebloods lay amongst them. The half-dozen or so surviving VPHC officers, some wounded, had been forced into a corner, and Gilbert and his men, high on adrenaline, were about to execute them. "Hold fire!" Gaunt snapped, moving in front of Gilbert, who glowered with anger-bright eyes and refused to put up his smoking hellgun. "Hold fire, I said! We came down to break up an illegal tribunal. Let's not make another wrong by taking the law into our own hands." "You can dispense it. You're a commissar," Gilbert growled, and his men agreed loudly. "When there's time, not here. You men, find shackles, cuff these bastards and lock them in the cells."
"Do as he says, Gilbert," Sturm said, approaching and holstering his pistol.
The blue-blood troopers began to herd the prisoners roughly out of the room. Gaunt looked around the chamber. Pater sat against the far wall, with Welt fanning his pallid face with a scribe slate. Dower was releasing the Narmenian defendants. The room was a ruin. Sturm's elite troops had slaughtered more than two-thirds of the VPHCers present in a brutal action that had lasted 2 minutes and had cost them three Bluebloods. Tarion was dead, his ribcage blasted open like a burned-out ship's hull. Gaunt crossed a cowl. The commissar was sat on one of the lower seating tiers, head bowed, clutching a hellburn across his right bicep.
"It's the end for you, Cal. You knew damn well what an abuse of the law this was. I'll personally oversee the avulsion of your career. A public disgrace. For the people's hero."
Cal slowly looked up into Gaunt's dark eyes. He said nothing, as there was nothing left to say. Gaunt turned away from the disturbing beige eyes. He remembered Bulhout in the early weeks of that campaign. Serving as part of Slado's command cadre, he had first encountered Cowl and his wretchedly vicious ways. Gaunt had thought he embodied the very worst aspects of the commissariat. After one particularly unnecessary punishment detail, when Cowl had had a man flogged to death for wearing the wrong cap badge, Gaunt had used his influence with the War Master to have Cowl transferred to duties on the southwest continent, away from the main front. That had been the start of Cowl's career decline, Gaunt realized now. A decline that had led him to the Vervenhive posting. Gaunt couldn't let it go. He turned back.
"You had a chance here, Pius. A chance to make good. You've the strength a commissar needs. You just have no control. Too busy enjoying the power and prestige of being the chief imperial commissar to the armies of Vergast."
"Don't," whispered Cowl. "Don't lecture me. Don't use my name like you're my friend. You're frightened of me because I have a strength you lack. It was the same on Bulhout, when you were Slado's lapdog. You thought I would eclipse you, so you used your position to have me sidelined."
Gaunt opened his mouth in astonishment. Words failed him for a moment.
"Is that what you think? That I reported you to advance my own career? It's what I know."
Cowl got to his feet slowly, wiping flecks of blood from his cheek.
"Actually, I'm almost glad it's over for me. I can go to my damnation relishing the knowledge that you've lost here. Vervenhive won't survive now. Not with the likes of you and Sturm in charge. You haven't got the balls."
"Like you mean?" Gaunt laughed.
"I would have led this hive to victory. It's a matter of courage, of iron will, of making decisions that may be unpalatable but which serve the greater triumph.
I'm just glad that history will never get a chance to prove you wrong, Cowl. Surrender your weapon and rank pins."
Cowl stood unmoving for a while, then tossed his pistol and insignia onto the floor. Gaunt looked down at them for a moment and then walked away.
"Appraise me of the situation upstairs," Gaunt said to Sturm. "When you arrived, you said the hive was under assault.
A storm on all fronts.
It looked grim, Gaunt."
Sturm refused to make eye contact with the Tanith commissar.
"Marshal Crow was ordering a full deployment to repulse."
"Sir."
Gaunt and Sturm looked round. Captain Dower stood nearby, his face alarmingly pale. He held out a data slate.
I used the stockade's codifier link to access house command. I thought you'd want an update and...
His voice trailed off. Gaunt took the slate and read it, thumbing the cursor rune to scroll the illuminated data. He could barely believe what he was seeing. The information was already a half hour old. The shield was down. Massive assaults and shelling had punished the hive. Zoican forces were already inside the curtain wall. Gaunt looked across at Grismond and his fellow Narmenians, flexing their freed limbs and sharing a flask of water. He'd come down here on a matter of individual justice, and when his back was turned, hell had overtaken Vervenhive. He almost doubted there'd be anything left to return to now at the surface. Under the coordinated command of Major Rawn and Colonel Corday, the Tanith and Volponi units holding Vervair Gate staunchly resisted the massive Zoican push for 6 hours, hammered by extraordinary levels of shelling. There was no ebb in the heedless advance of Zoican foot troops, and the waste ground immediately outside the gate was littered for hundreds of meters around with the enemy dead. Along the orework emplacements at the top of the spoil, McColl's marksmen and Orman's spoilers held the slag slopes with a relentless expertise. McColl voxed Rawn when his ammunition supplies began to dwindle. Both had sent requests to House Command for immediate resupply, but the link was dead, and neither liked the look of the great firestorms seething out of the hive heartland behind them. Larkin, holding a chimney stack with McVenna and Domor, had personally taken 39 kills. It was his all-time best in any theater, but he had neither time nor compunction enough to celebrate. The more he killed, the more the memory of the Zoican's bared face burned in his racing mind. At the brunt end of the Vervair position, Bragg ran out of rockets for his launcher and discarded it. It was overheating anyway. His autogun jammed after a few shots, so he moved down the trench, keeping his hefty frame lower than the parapet as lasfire hammered in, and he took over a tripod-mounted stubber whose crew had been shot. As he began to squeeze the brass trigger pull of the thumping heavy weapon, he saw Fagor spin back and drop nearby. A las round had hit him in the neck. Lesp, the field medic attending the trench, scrambled over to Fagor, leaving a gut-shot Volponi who was beyond his help.
"Is he okay?"
Bragg yelled. Lesp fought with the struggling Fagor, clamping wet dressings around the scorched and melted flesh of his neck and trying to clear an airway.
"His trachea is fused. Feth, help me hold him!"
Bragg fired a last burst or two and then dropped from the stub nest and ran to Fagor and the slender medic. It took all of his gargantuan strength to hold Fagor down as Lesp worked. The las hit had cauterized the wound, so there was precious little blood, but the heat had melted the larynx and the windpipe into a grisly knot, and Fagor was suffocating. His eyes were white with pain and fear, and his mouth clacked as he screamed silent curses.
"Feth!"
Lesp threw the small plastic-handled scalpel away in disgust and pulled out his long, silver Tanith knife. He stuck it into Fagor's throat under the blackened mass of the scorched wound and opened a slot in the windpipe, big enough to feed a chest tube down. Fagor began breathing again, rattling and gurgling through the tube. Lesp yelled something up at Bragg that a nearby shellfall drowned out.
"What?"
"We'll have to get him clear."
Bragg hoisted Fagor up in his arms without question and began to run with him back down the lines. The Tanith units that had held Vervair 2 nights before pushed south from their temporary mustering yard as soon as the shield failed. Corbeck led them, and Sergeant Baffle's platoon was amongst them. Lacking orders from House Command, Corbeck had agreed to move west while Colonel Bulwer's North Col forces moved east, hoping to reinforce the Vervair and Crow positions. In tight manufacturing enclaves behind the once proud Vervair rail terminal, Corbeck's deployment encountered crossfire from the west. Corbeck realized in horror that while Vervair might be sound, the enemy were pouring in through Sondar Gate unstaunched. He set up a scarifying resistance in a factory structure called Guild Githran Agricultural, and he tried to vox his situation to Rawn or Corday. Corday eventually responded. It took a while for Corbeck to convince him that enemy forces, already in the inner hive, were in danger of encircling the solid Vervair defense. They chose a window each, coughing in the dust that the bombardment was shaking up from the old floorboards. Milo saw las rounds punching through the fiberboard sidings of the broken building, and he heard the grunt gasp of flamers. The enemy was right outside. From the windows under Baffle's direction, they fired at will. It was difficult to see what they were hitting. Philane and Tokar both yowled out victory whoops as they guessed they brought Zoikens down. Rhys, one window down from Milo, stopped firing and sagged, as if very tired. Milo pulled round and called out to him, stopping short when he saw the bloodless las hole in Rhys's forehead. A falling shell blew out a silo nearby, and the building shook. Colonel Corbeck's voice came over the microbead link, calm and stern. "This is the one, boys. Do it right, or die here." Milo loaded a fresh cell and joined his platoon in blasting from the chewed window holes. More than 300 Tanith were still resting, off guard, in their makeshift chemplant billet, when the shield came down and the onslaught began. Sergeant Bray, the ranking officer, had them all dress and arm at once, and he voxed House Command for instructions. House Command was dead. Bray found he couldn't reach Corbeck, Rawn, or Gaunt, or any military authorities. What vox links were still live were awash with mindless panic or the insidious chatter broadcasts of the enemy. Bray made a command decision, the biggest he'd ever made in his career. He pulled the Tanith under his charge back from the billets and had them dig in amongst the rubble wastelands behind, wastelands created in the first bombardment at the start of the war. It was an informed, judicious command. Gaunt had taught tactics thoroughly, and Bray had listened. A move forward, towards Sondar Gate and the Square of Marshals 3 kilometers south, would have been foolhardy given the lack of solid intelligence. Staying put would have left them in a wide warehouse sector difficult to secure or defend. The rubble wastes played directly to the Ghost's strengths. Here they could dig in, cover themselves, and form a solid front. As if to confirm Bray's decision, mortar fire leveled the chem plant billets 20 minutes after the Tanith had withdrawn. Advanced storm units of Zoikan infantry crossed into the wasteland half an hour later and were cut down by the well-defended Ghosts. In the following hours, Bray's men engaged and held off over 2,000 ochre-clad troops and began to form a line of resistance that stymied the Zoikan push in from Sondar Gate. Then, Zoikan tanks began to arrive, trundling up through the blasted arterial roads adjoining the Square of Marshals. They were light, fast machines, built for infantry support, ochre drab and covered with netting, with turrets set back on the main hull, mounting pairs of small-caliber cannons. Bray had thoughtfully removed all the rocket grenades and launchers from the billet stockpile, and his men began to hunt tanks in the jagged piles of the wasteland, leaving their las rifles in foxholes so they could carry, aim, and load the rocket tubes. In 3 hours of intense fighting, they destroyed 20 machines. The slipways off the arterials were ablaze with crackling tank hulls by the time heavier armor units, massive main battle tanks, and super-heavy self-propelled guns began to roll and clank up into the Chem District. Cafran braced against the kick of the rocket launcher and banged off a projectile grenade that he swore went directly down the fat barrel of an approaching siege tank, blowing the turret clean off. Dust and debris winnowed back over his position, and he scrambled around to reach another foxhole, Trooper Trigg running with him with the belt of rockets. Cafran could hear Bray yelling commands nearby. He slipped into a drain culvert and sloshed along through the ankle-deep muck. Trigg was saying something behind him, but Cafran wasn't really listening. It was beginning to rain. With the shield down, the inner halves were exposed to the downpour. The wasteland became a quagmire of oily mud in under a quarter of an hour. Cafran reached the ruins of a habitat and searched for a good firing point. 100 meters away, Tanith launchers barked and spat rockets at the rumbling Zoikan advance. Every few moments, there would be a plangent thump, and another tank round would scream overhead. Cafran was wet through. The rainfall was cutting visibility to 30 meters. He clambered up the scorched wreck of an old armchair and hoisted himself up into an upper window space, from which he could get a good view of the rubble waste outside. "Toss me a few live ones," he called down to Trigg. Trigg made a sound like a scalded cat and fell, severed at the waist. Ochre-armored stormtroops flooded into the ruin below Cafran, firing wildly. A shot hit Trigg's belt of grenades, and the blast threw Cafran clear of the building shell and onto the rubble outside. Cafran clawed his way upright as Zoikens rushed him from 3 sides. Pulling out his Tanith dagger, he plunged it through the eye slit of the nearest. He clubbed the next down with his rocket tube. Another shot at him and missed. Cafran rolled away, firing his loaded rocket launcher. The rocket hit the Zeuchen in the gut, lifted him 20 meters into the air, and blew him apart. There was a crack of lasfire, and a Zeuchen that Catherine hadn't seen dropped dead behind him. He glanced about. Holding the las pistol Caffran had given her as a gift, Tona Creed crept out of cover. She turned once, killing another Zeuchen with a double shot. Caffran grabbed her by the hand, and they ran into the cover of a nearby hab as dozens more Zeuchen troopers advanced, firing as they came. In the shadows of the hab ruin, Caffran looked at her, one soot-smeared face mirrored by the other.
"Caffran," he said.
"Creed,"
she replied. The Zeuchens were right outside, firing into the ruins.
"Good to know you,"
he said. The cage elevators carried them up as far as level sub-6 before the power in the low spine failed and the cars ground to a screeching halt. Soot and dust trickled and fluttered down the echoing shaft from above. They exited the lifts on their bellies, crawling out through grill doors that had half missed the next floor, and they found themselves in a poorly lit access corridor between water treatment plants. Gaunt and Bwelt had to pull Pater bodily out of the lift car and onto the floor. The old man was panting and refused to go on. Gilbert and his troops had fanned down the hallway, guns ready. Dower had guard of Cowl, and Sturm was trying to light a shredded stub end of a cigar. Grismond and his officers were taut and attentive, armed with shotguns they had taken from the VPHC dead.
"Where are we?" Gaunt asked Bwelt.
"Level sub-6, an underhive section, actually."
Gaunt nodded. "We need a staircase access." Down the damp hallway, one of Gilbert's men cried out. He'd found a stepwell.
"Stay with him and move him on when he's able," Gaunt told Bwelt, indicating the ailing Pater. He crossed to Grismond. "As soon as we reach the surface, I need you to rejoin your units."
Grismond nodded.
"I'll do my best. Once I've got to them, what channel should we use?"
1090 Gamma, Gaunt replied. It was the old Hyakin wavelength. "I'm heading up spine to try to get the shield back on. Use that channel to coordinate. Code phrase is Uncle Dersius."
"Uncle Dersius?
Just remember it, okay?"
Grismond nodded again.
"Sure. And I won't forget your efforts today, Colonel Commissar."
"Get out there and prove my belief in you," Gaunt snarled. "I need the Narmenian armor at full strength if I'm going to hold this place." General Grismond and his men pushed on past and hurried up the stairs.
"Sounds like you've taken command, Gaunt," Sturm said snidely.
Gaunt turned to him. "In the absence of other command voices," Sturm's face lost its smile and its color.
"I'm still ranking guard commander here, Ibram Gaunt. Or had you forgotten?"
"It's been so long since you issued an order, Notchus Sturm. I probably have."
The two men faced each other in the low, musty basement corridor. Gaunt wasn't backing down now.
"We have no choice, my dear Colonel Commissar. A full tactical retreat. Vervenhive is lost. These things happen. You get used to it."
"Maybe you do. Maybe you've had more experience in running away than me."
"You low-life swine,"
Gilbert rasped, stomping forward. Gaunt punched him in the face, dropping him to the floor.
"Get up and get used to me, Gilbert. We've got a fething heavy task ahead of us, and I need the best the Volpone can muster."
The Volpone troops were massing around them, and even Pater had got up onto his feet for a better view.
"The shield must be turned back on. It's a priority. We've got to get up into the top of the hive and effect that. Don't fight me here. There'll be more than enough fighting to go around later."
Gaunt reached down with his hand to pull Gilbert up. The big blue blood hesitated and then accepted the grip. Gaunt pulled Gilbert right up to his face, nose to nose.
"So, let's go see what kind of soldier you are, Colonel,"
the blue blood said. They climbed the dim stairs as far as level low 2 and then found a set of cargo lifts still supplied with power. The massive spine shuddered around them, pummeled from the outside by the enemy. Crowded into a lift car, the Volpone checked weapons under Gilbert's supervision. Sturm stood aside, silent. Gaunt crossed to Dower and his prisoner.
"Ban?"
"Sir?"
"I need schematics of the upper spine. Anything you can get."
Ban Dower nodded and began to resource data via his slate.
"Salvador Sundar has total control of the shield mechanism," said Cowell suddenly. "He exists on level top 700.
His palace is protected by obsidian-grade security. Gaunt looked at Cal, bemused. It sounded for a moment there like you were trying to help us, Pius. Cal spat on the floor.
I don't really want to die, Ibram. I know this hive. I know its workings. I'd be the callous bastard you think I am if I didn't offer my knowledge.
Go on, said Gaunt, cautiously.
Salvador Sundar has been borderline mad since I first met him. He's a recluse, preferring to spend his time in an awareness tank in his chambers. Yet he has absolute control of the hive defenses. They're hardwired into his brain. If you intend to turn the shield back on, you'll have to deal with the High Master himself.
The lift cage lurched as a shockwave passed through the spine. Gaunt looked out of the cage door as they ascended, and he saw a flickering procession of empty halls, then some thick with screaming habbers beating on the cage bars. They rose past fire-black levels and ones where twisted skeletons, baked dry by the heat of incendiaries, clawed at the lift doors. One level was ablaze, and they flinched as they passed up by its flames. Dower handed Gaunt the slate with a plan of the upper spine loaded onto it. Another 400 levels, Gaunt thought, watching the lights on the lift's indicator panel, and the High Master and I will have ourselves a reckoning. Lord Chas and his three bodyguards had reached level top 700 and forced their way in through the powerless blast doors. Shots came their way the moment they emerged, killing one of the bodyguards outright with a head wound. Chas pulled out his gun and fired it as his remaining bodyguards unshrouded their hand cannons and blasted tracer strings down the plush, marble-walled atrium. A las round hit Lord Chas in the left knee and dropped him face down onto the carpet. The pain was extraordinary, but he didn't cry out. His bodyguards ran to him and were both cut down by sprays of las fire. His lifeblood was pumping away through his leg wound. Lord Chas knew he was going to die very soon. He crawled forward, a few centimeters at a time, soaking the priceless carpet with his blood. He couldn't see who or what was firing at him. The atrium was made of green sipiline stone and decorated with House Sondar banners. Light globes hung on chains from the high roof. At the atrium's far end, a wide arch led through into the audience hall, the Sondar chapel, and the private residence. He flopped over behind a sandstone jardiniere and loaded a fresh shell into his compact handgun. He thought about reaching for one of the fallen bodyguard's las pistols, but they were exposed in the open, and Sondar's unseen protectors were raking the carpeted floor with steady fire. Then the firing stopped. Three meat puppets swung into view in the archway, a cloaked female, a naked youth covered in gold body paint, and something rank and emaciated that was only vaguely human anymore. All lolled wretchedly, eyes vacant, las rifles wired into their hands. They came unsteadily down the atrium, wobbling on the feed tubes and wires that played out from a recessed trackway in the ceiling. Though their eyes didn't move, they seemed to sense him. Chas knew they were guided by heat and motion systems wired into the palace walls. They fired again, blowing chunks off the jardiniere and hitting Chas in the foot and shin of his already wounded leg. He fired his single-shot piece, and the heavy round took the youth's head off. It continued to advance and shoot. A sudden burst of autogun fire licked down the atrium and tore the puppets to pieces, leaving nothing but a few shreds of flesh trailing from the wires. Four men came down the hall from the main entrance. Chas knew their maroon body glove armor made them guards from Crow's personal retinue. Their leader was Isak. He knelt by Lord Chas as his companions moved on to secure the archway. Isak bowed his respects to the nobleman, then reached into his harness pouches for field dressings.
The marshal sent you.
I am instructed to take any action necessary to restore the shield, Lord. That includes the suppression of High Master Sondar and his forces.
At last, Crow is acting with the same purpose as me, thought Chas. He felt no pain from Isak's work on his wounds. He was cold and everything seemed distant.
Help me up, he told the bodyguard. You'll need the genoprint of a noble to activate the shield systems.
Isak nodded and hoisted Lord Chas up by the armpits as if he was as light as a feather. From beyond the arch came the sounds of renewed gunfire. In the colonnade beyond the atrium, a long cloister of wooden beams and inlaid upper balconies with a roof of stained glass, Isak's men had encountered more servitor puppets. Some were appearing in the balcony galleries, others moving down the open length of the cloister. The House Crow guardsmen were pinned near the archway. Lord Chas, leaning heavily on Isak for support, noticed a smell, a spicy taint that stung his nostrils, sweeter and more subtle than the sharp pungency of the discharged weapons.
"What is that smell?"
he whispered, half to himself. "Chaos," Ibram Gaunt said. Chas and Isak looked round from the archway where they were sheltering, and saw Gaunt leading the team of Blue Blood elite down the atrium with silent precision. Dower, Cowl, and Sturm were at the back of the line, Gilbert alongside the Commissar. All weapons were drawn. "It seems we share a mission," Gaunt said dryly. He gestured to Gilbert, and the Volpone moved three of his seven troopers round to cover the far side of the arch. In a moment, they were adding the considerable force of their hellguns to the dispute.
"Sic semper tyrannis,"
Chas whispered, and smiled at Gaunt.
"I knew you would serve Vervenhive with true valor."
His voice was faint. Gaunt looked at the wounds that mauled the nobleman's leg. Isak had applied a tourniquet high up on the thigh, but his robes were soaked with blood. Gaunt caught Isak's look. They both knew how close to death Chas was. Chas knew it too.
"I'd like to see us victorious before my passing, Colonel Commissar."
Gaunt nodded. He shouted to the Volpone, "Let's not waste any more time. Take the chamber now." Gilbert looked across and tapped the grenade launcher mounted under his hellgun's barrel with a predatory grin.
"Permission?"
"Given," said Gaunt. "Tell your men in there to duck and cover." He told Isak, and the bodyguard snarled through his microbead. Gilbert and one of his point men bellowed the Volpone battle pledge at the tops of their lungs as they launched grenade after grenade in through the arch. The launcher mechanisms thumped and clacked as they pumped them. The blast, a series of explosions piled on top of one another, ripped back down the colonnade and blew out the galleries and the glass roof. Debris and ash washed back through the arch. Before the smoke even began to clear, the Volpone stormed the room, yelling and firing. Whatever else he thought about them, Gaunt had to give the Blue Bloods their due. They were finely trained, ruthlessly effective, heavy troops. He'd seen their worth on Monthax. Now they were proving it again. With his bolt pistol and chainsword drawn, Gaunt ploughed into the colonnade after them, followed by Isak and the Crow guards, with Dower and Sturm left to assist Chas. Cowl simply wandered along behind. The place was a ruin. Dismembered or support-severed servitors littered the wooden wreckage. One puppet, which had been standing on a now-collapsed balcony, swung above their heads like a corpse in a gibbet. The Blue Bloods fanned out, moving down side halls, exchanging fire with lifeless defenders. "Which way?" Gaunt asked Chas. But the wounded man was only semi-conscious.
"The audience hall is down to the left," Isak said.
"What do you mean? The smell was chaos,"
asked Chas, suddenly swimming awake. "The filth that corrupted Ferrozoika is here. It's got inside House Sonder, permeating everything. Probably why the bastard turned the shield off. Cowl said Sonder was wired directly into the Hive's systems. I'd lay bets that's how it got to him, infecting him like a disease."
"You mean the Hive systems are corrupted too?"
"No, but Sonder has listened to lies that have come directly into his mind. The fact they say he was mad to begin with can't help." He checked ahead and saw the large double doors to the chamber. "With me," Gaunt yelled, his chainsword buzzing murderously. The Volpone fire team formed up behind him and had to run to keep up. Gaunt burst through the doors and clashed directly with more servitor puppets in the entrance lobby. His chainsword cut through support wires and flesh. He hacked clear of their murderous attentions as Gilbert and his men came in behind, finishing the rest. The audience chamber was large and softly lit. The air was warm and now so much thicker with the taint smell. Muslin wall drapes twitched in the ventilator breeze. On the far side of the room sat a large iron tank, its shell rich with verdigris from its brass fittings, fashioned with a single, baleful porthole in the front.
"I see you. What are you?"
asked an electronic voice that came from all around. Gaunt walked towards the awareness tank. "I am the agency of Imperial Authority on this world."
"I am the authority here," said the voice. "I am the High Master of Vervenhive. You are nothing. I see you, and you are nothing. Begone.
Salvador Sondar, if you still answer to that name, your power is ended. In the name of the God Emperor of mankind, and for the continued welfare of this subject planet, I order you to surrender yourself to the Imperial Guard.
Surrender?
Do it. You will not enjoy the alternative.
You have nothing that threatens me, nothing to tempt me. Heritor Asphodel has promised me this world in totality. The Chatter has told me this.
Asphodel is the spawn of the warp, and his promises are meaningless. I give you one last chance to comply.
And I give you this.
The servitor came into the room through a doorway concealed by muslin drapes. Sondar's macabre fascination with his meat toys was infamous in the noble houses, and many efforts had been made to curtail his surgical whims and clone farming over the years. This thing was far more than that, more even than the deluded creation of a mad flesh engineer. The insanity of the warp was in it. 1,800 kilos of scarred meat and gristle, bigger than a Hyakon antlodon, a jigsaw of human parts fused into the carcass of a wild auroch from the grasslands. Limbs twisted and writhed around it, some human with grasping hands, some animal, some wet, glistening pseudopods, like the muscular legs of giant mollusks. The massive head was an eyeless mouth full of needle teeth that smacked slackly and gurgled. The donor auroch's vast horns swept outwards from the low skull crest. A multitude of cables, feeds, and wires suspended it. But unlike the other meat puppets, this thing moved of its own volition, pawing and stamping the soft carpet, writhing and pulsing. The smell was overwhelming. Gilbert and the Volpone backed off a few paces in astonishment. Sturm cried out in horror, and one of the House Crow bodyguards turned and ran. The meat beast came for them, moving with a speed and fluidity that seemed impossible for something so vast. It howled as it came, a piercing, sibilant shriek of rage. Gaunt leapt aside and was knocked over by a flailing pseudopod. The slime burned through his leather coat where it touched. Gilbert fired twice, blowing open holes in the lower belly of the thing. These issued spurts of stagnant pus onto the carpet. Then the blue blood kernel was flying through the air, tossed aside by a twist of the huge horns. Backing frantically, the other Volpone fired wildly. Blubbery, wet punctures appeared in the creature's flank, some oozing filmy fluid, others erupting with sprays of tissue and watery blood. A cloned human arm was blown right off and lay twitching on the ground. A screaming Volpone was hoisted into the air and shaken violently to death, impaled through the chest on one of the horns. Another was crushed under the meat beast's bulk, leaving a trampled mess of blood, bone, and broken armor pressed into the carpet. Grasping limbs and curling pseudopods caught hold of a third and began to pull him apart, slowly and inexorably. His agonized wailing drowned out the meat beast's keening roar. Gaunt scrambled up, dazed, and shot the clasped Volpone through the head to end his drawn-out death. He fired again and again until the sickle clip of his bolt gun was empty, the powerful close-range shots blowing chunks of raw meat and translucent fat out of the creature. Blood and ichor spurted from the wounds. The monster wheeled round at Gaunt, wailing. Head down, it charged him, and the horns, one still decorated with the limp corpse of the Volpone soldier, smashed into the chamber wall, gouging the ceramite facing. Gaunt dived aside, swinging his chainsword round with both hands. The purring blade sliced through the top of the skull and chopped one of the horns off. Then Gaunt was rolling away again, trying to stay out of reach of the biting maw that chased after him, drooling spittle. With its attention on Gaunt, the meat beast had turned away from the remaining Volpone, and they resumed firing, ripping into the thing's hindquarters, but apparently doing nothing to slow it down. Gaunt knew that demonic force pulsed inside the beast, a life energy that animated it beyond any considerations of physical function. If there was a brain or any vital organs at all, they would be useless as targets. The thing wasn't alive in any real sense. It couldn't be killed the way a human could be killed. Dower was firing too now, as were the remaining House Crow guards, and Cowl had scooped up the weapon of a dead Volpone, adding his own shots to the fight. Chas was slumped limply in a corner, unconscious. There was no sign of Sturm. Gaunt hacked into the thing again, ripping through ribs.
His chainsword was matted and clogged with the beast's fluid and tissue, and steam was rising from the blade where it was being eaten away by the toxic deposits. Gaunt cursed. Delane Oktar, his old mentor, now long dead, had given him that sword on Darandara, right at the start of his career, when he had still been green and eager. He had carried it ever since, all through his time with the Hyakans, until his service under Slado at Balhaut, and beyond to Tanith and every victory of his beloved ghosts. Its destruction hurt him more than he could say. It took the past from him, took his memories and victories away. He jammed the dying blade into the beast's shoulder, kicking out a wash of toxic blood and bone chips. Wedged fast, the sword disintegrated, and the power unit in the grip exploded. Gaunt was thrown backwards. The thing lunged down after him, biting at his kicking boots as he scrambled backwards on his backside. Isak and two of the Volponi surged forward, firing to cover him and draw the thing away. As it wheeled on them, Gaunt found himself dragged clear. It was Gilbert. Blood flecked the front of his armor-plast chestplate, and there was rage in his eyes. He hauled Gaunt back towards the green bulk of the iron tank. Another Volponi was caught by the beast's clamping jaws and shredded by savage bites of its teeth. The walls and drapes of the audience hall were sprayed heavily with blood now. The creature turned on Isak, snapping off his head and shoulders with one crushing bite. His body fell beneath its clawing, stamping legs.
"A gun!" Gaunt yelled to Gilbert.
"Lost mine," replied the blue blood colonel, referring to the hell gun that had been tossed aside with him. He had out his powerful sidearm, a long-barreled autogun plated with chrome. He put shell after shell into the creature's neck. Gaunt scrambled forward, retrieving his bolt gun, and slammed a fresh clip into the receiver. He would kill this thing before he died. By the ghosts of Tanith, he would. The meat beast slew one of the remaining crow guards and flew at Dower and Cowl, trailing meat and blood from its mouth. Both men stood their ground, exhibiting levels of bravery as high as any Gaunt had ever witnessed. They pumped relentless shots into the approaching nightmare. Nothing slowed it. Hastily, they both dived aside. Dar rolled into Chass's crumpled body and frantically tried to reload. Cowl landed on a Volponi corpse. The creature headed for him.
"Get clear!" Gaunt bellowed.
Cowl was apparently fumbling with the dead Blue Blood's equipment belts. Gaunt and Gilbert fired again in a futile attempt to drop the thing. At the final moment, Cowl turned and rose. He faced the rushing beast with his arms held out. He was clutching a canvas web of grenades. The meat beast bit his arms off at the elbows, and Cowl tumbled backwards, blood jetting from the stumps. He didn't make a sound. The creature convulsed, retched, and exploded from within. Its massive torso blew out in a rush of flame and body matter. A spinning section of rib, thrown out by the blast, stuck quivering into the wall near Gaunt like a spear. Flames gouted out of the huge mouth. The beast collapsed onto the floor, pulling feed lines and wires out of the ceiling. The pool of stinking fluid spreading beneath it began to burn the carpet away. With Gilbert behind him, Gaunt crossed to the carcass.
"We need a flamer. We need to burn this abomination as soon as possible."
"Yes, Colonel Commissar," Gilbert answered, turning to the surviving Volponi.
Cowl, on his back in a widening circle of blood, was still alive. Gaunt knelt beside him, soaking his knees.
"Said you didn't have the balls,"
Cowl said, his voice so weak it was barely audible. Gaunt had no words for him.
"Envy you?"
"What?" Gaunt asked, bending closer.
"Balhaut. You were there at the victory with the War Master. I envy you. I would have given everything to share in that."
"Pious, you..."
"Shut up, Gaunt. Not interested in anything you have to say to me. You took my honor away. You ruined me. I hope the Emperor will forgive you for robbing Terra of a great leader like me."
Gaunt shook his head. He reached into his pocket and pulled out Cowl's rank studs and cap badge. Carefully and deferentially, he pinned them back in place. Cowl seemed to notice what Gaunt was doing, though his eyes were wide and dilated, and the blood was now merely trickling from his ghastly stumps.
"Goodbye, Commissar. You gave your best."
Gaunt saluted. A sharp, smart gesture he hadn't made in a long time. Cowl smiled, barely.
then died. Gaunt got up from the corpse of the people's hero and crossed to the awareness tank.
"Get Lord Chas up. Get the shield back on," he said to Dower, sourly.
Dower nodded and began to raise the feeble Vergas noble. Gilbert joined Gaunt at the tank. They looked down at the thickly glazed porthole.
"Come up with a way for me to pay you back as soon as you can," Gaunt said, not looking round at the Volpone.
"What?"
"You pulled me clear of the beast. I don't want to be in the debt of a high-caste bastard like you any longer than I have to be."
Gilbert grinned.
"I think I may have underestimated you, Gaunt. I had no idea you were such an arrogant swine."
Gaunt glanced round. It would take another Ibram Gaunt and a whole different universe for there to be any trust or comradeship between him and Gilbert. But for now, in the thick of this nightmare, Gaunt couldn't help respecting the soldier. For that was what he was, a devoted soldier of the God Emperor, just like Gaunt. They didn't have to like each other to make it work. A measure of understanding and honor between them was enough.
Gaunt bent down to look through the port glass, and Gilbert did likewise at his side. Through the fog of murky, phlogistic fluid, they could just make out a frail, naked body, withered and corrupted, drifting inside the tank, its skull linked to wires and cables that curled upwards to the roof.
"We can call it quits if you let me finish this," said Gilbert.
"He's all yours," said Gaunt.
Gilbert smirked, arming the hellgun he had just received.
"What about your due process? What about taking the law into your own hands?"
he asked sarcastically.
"I can dispense it. I'm a commissar."
"That's what you said, wasn't it?" Gilbert nodded and fired two shots through the portal window. Filthy green water rushed out in torrents, flooding the floor. Steam rose from it. Gilbert leaned down once the force of the outrush slackened, and he watched the twitching, spasming form of the High Master trembling in his draining tank. He fired a grenade in through the broken port and turned away. A dull crump and the sheet of steam that billowed out of the window hole marked the end of Salvador Sondar, High Master of Vervenhive. Dower had carried Chas over to the brass console in the wall, and he helped the enfeebled lord punch in the override settings. Chas mumbled the codes to Dower just in time. The noble was dead by the time Gaunt reached them. The runic sigils on the console plate asked for a noble genoprint. Gaunt simply lifted one of Chas's limp hands and pressed it to the reader slate.
"Sic semper tyrannis, Lord Chas,"
Gaunt whispered.
"Did he see victory, sir?"
asked Dower.
"He saw enough. We'll find out if this is a victory or not."
Automated systems cycled and whirred. Deep in the bowels of Vervenhive, field batteries throbbed. The pylon crackled and the anchor stations that remained intact raised their masts. With a resounding, fulminating crack and a reek of ozone, the shield was reignited. Ibram Gaunt left the audience hall of House Sondar and walked up onto an enclosed roof terrace that overlooked the entire hive. Fires burned below, thousands of them, and streaks of constant shelling lit the air. The shield overhead glowed and crackled. Now the last ditch had begun.